afternoon. So you can already see that I went off track because I ended up analyzing more years of data than we put in our abstract title, so I apologize. I just wanted to give you a little background about the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board. We serve the 43 federally recognized tribes in Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. The board was incorporated in 1972, and we have housed the Northwest Tribal Epicenter, served as the parent organization since 1997. As a disclaimer, I'm not a tribal member, but I'm very grateful for the support that the board gives us for our work and their support of us presenting at CSTE. So this map shows you where our tribes are located. As Samantha mentioned, tribes, if you've worked with one tribe, you've worked with one tribe. Our tribes are quite diverse in terms of their history, their population size, their interaction with each other, and their interaction with the state and federal government. Geographically, you can see that there are some tribes that are coastal tribes. Some tribes are further inland in more rural parts of these states. Some of the things that are common for the American Indian, American Indian population in these three states is about 353,000. So it's about 3% of the total population of those states. That includes not just tribal members, but there are also large urban centers such as Seattle and Portland that have large American Indian populations. So as some of the other presenters have mentioned, American Indians are distinct from the general population in that they tend to be younger. They face some socioeconomic challenges such as lower educational attainment, higher poverty rates. And we've seen regionally that the life expectancy for American Indians in this area is significantly lower than the non-Hispanic white population. One of the other ways that American Indians in the Northwest and the US might be distinct is that they tend to be more rural than the general population. So if you look at the boxes, the squares on the top, those show you the Northwest and U.S. American Indian population. In the Northwest, in 2014, about 25% of American Indians lived in rural areas. That's higher than the 15% of the general Northwest population, but contrary to what many people think, at least in the Northwest, most American Indians are urban. They're growing more urban over time. But proportionally, a higher percentage live in rural areas. To take it to the topic of this presentation, substance abuse, so we know that historically, urban areas were seen as, rural areas were seen as being somewhat protected from issues of substance abuse, but in recent years, we've seen rates of substance abuse and substance abuse deaths increasing in rural areas. In rural areas, some of the patterns that you see in the types of substances used are a little different than what you see in urban areas. For example, alcohol use is higher in rural areas. And some of the explaining factors for what puts rural populations at higher risk are things like unemployment, higher unemployment rates, and lower levels of educational attainment. They're also a younger population, though you are seeing this kind of flight of younger populations to urban areas. So some of those same reasons and some of those sad statistics also apply to American Indian communities in general. American Indians have significantly higher rates of drug overdose deaths than the general population in the U.S. These are national statistics. They tend to initiate substance abuse at younger ages, and they tend to use different substances, so alcohol and tobacco tend to be higher, have higher rates in American Indian communities. What maybe makes American Indian communities different are issues of historical trauma, which are an explaining factor for why you see substance abuse as a coping factor for that loss of culture, language, and traditional foods, traditional ceremonies. There's also an issue of quite racist stereotypes about substance abuse in these communities. For example, there's the stereotype of drunk Indians. So this makes it very difficult, both at the individual level and for communities, to talk about these issues, even though they are of priority. So we've heard at the Northwest Tribal Epicenter for several years that substance abuse and mental health are priorities for our tribal health leaders. It's at the top, if not the top issue, when we do surveys, asking our delegates what's important to you. So in recent years, as we've amassed more data sets that we can use to evaluate these issues, we've started doing analyses to report back to our tribal leaders and also to advocate for more funding to look at these issues. So this brings us to our methods. So for this analysis, we use death records of residents of Idaho, Oregon, and Washington over 7 years. All these death records are corrected for American Indian racial misclassification through record linkage with our tribal registry. And we use non-Hispanic white deaths for our comparison. We used an expanded case definition than what often is reported out, say, in MMWR. It's the Injury Surveillance Workgroup's consensus recommendations for poisoning surveillance. This includes not only the acute cases, so I think of them as the X and Y ICD-10 codes, but also say like F11, which is falls under the mental health and behavioral section of ICD-10, as well as things like cirrhosis due to alcohol use. So it's not just those acute poisoning cases, but also chronic. We identified cases or deaths using ICD-10 codes in the underlying and multiple cause of death fields. And then to take a look at urban and rural counties, we use the National Center for Health Statistics 2013 Urban Rural Classification Scheme. And I can provide you more information in a later slide if you are interested. All our analyses were done in SAS, and we used the NCHS post-censal bridge race estimates for our population denominators. So our results. We found about, over the seven-year period, we found about 10,565 total deaths after correcting for misclassification. And about 10.8% of those deaths were due to alcohol or drug-related causes. And that was significantly higher compared to what you see in the non-Hispanic white population. When you start to look at demographic factors, American Indian deaths tended to be younger, so a mean age of 47.2. The age distribution also points to that younger, points out that American Indian deaths tend to happen in the younger age groups. 35, you see the peak happening at the 35 to 49 age group, while it happens in the 50 to 64 age group for non-Hispanic whites. For both American Indians and whites, males had higher percentage of deaths, but the gap between males and females for American Indians was a lot narrower. When we looked at rural versus urban counties, most of the deaths occurred in urban counties for both groups. But the gap, again, was narrower for American Indians. So about 28.4% of deaths occurred in rural counties compared to 17.6% for non-Hispanic whites. When we did a breakdown for alcohol or drug-related causes, about 57% of American Indian deaths occurred were due to alcohol, while for non-Hispanic whites, slightly more, over half, were drug-related. And because of a lot of the interest recently due of opioid-related deaths, we looked at to see if opioid analgesics were involved in any of the multiple cause of death fields. And I thought this was interesting. For American Indians, a lower proportion of these deaths had any prescription medications, including opioid analgesics, indicated in the field. So when you actually look at this as a rate, you can see it, the picture looks a little bit different. So this fancy diagram was my attempt to use my new infographic skills. We'll see if it works. So to orient you to how these next few charts look, the box on the far, your left side, shows you the comparison that we're making. So in this case, we're comparing non-Hispanic whites to American Indians. The yellow dot furthest to the left, it corresponds to that first group on the left side. So here, the age-adjusted rate for non-Hispanic whites for alcohol or drug-related deaths was 27 per 100,000. The pink dot tells you the American Indian rate, which is 75.1 per 100,000. And then the white box shows you the rate ratio and the 95% confidence interval around that rate ratio. So here the rate ratio was 2.8, and since the confidence interval doesn't include one, it's a significant difference. So for these first few comparisons are getting at disparities. So they're all comparisons of non-Hispanic whites to American Indians. When we looked at rural versus urban comparisons, the gap for rural in the rural areas was larger. So the rate ratio for non-Hispanic whites versus American Indians was 3.1 and about 2.7 for urban areas. And then if we look at a kind of a within group comparison, for American Indians, urban areas had slightly lower rates compared to rural areas. So for rural American Indians, 86.4 deaths per 100,000, and the rate ratio was 1.2. For non-Hispanic whites, it was about the same. So that we didn't really see a difference between urban and rural areas for drug and alcohol related deaths. And then because I rarely get to run regression models, I thought I'll do this too, which basically tells you the same thing. You see a disparity regardless, even after you control for age and sex. You see a disparity for American Indians living in rural areas, while you don't quite see that disparity for non-Hispanic whites in the age-adjusted rate, or for the age-adjusted, for the adjusted odds ratio. And this is looking at the odds of dying of a drug or alcohol-related death if you're a rural resident. Some time ago, one of our analysts was just looking at mortality data, and one of the things that really stood out to us was the trend data. Oh, I better hurry up. So this was just kind of looking at trends in drug and alcohol overdose deaths for two of our states. And you can see that just the steep rise, regardless of residence for American Indians, there's also an increase in death rates for non-Hispanic whites. But just that gap and disparity, I think, is quite striking when you start to look at trend data. I did opioids, but I'm going to skip that. So as I mentioned, substance abuse is a priority for Northwest tribal leaders. And so as we've been going through these data, we're thinking about how can we use this to move this conversation forward and support our tribal leaders. And one of the issues is that our mortality data are incomplete. So one of the major issues that we have, we can cut these data down to local level, maybe. I think the small numbers issues would still be an issue. But there, especially with data sources like BRFIS or NISDA, it's almost impossible to get local or even regional level data on things like prevalence or treatment or risk factors. So even though we're seeing higher mortality rates, I don't know if that's being driven by higher rates of use or a lack of treatment or some combination of those two things. So until we have that information and either the feds or our state partners help us collect that information, we're still going to be providing incomplete information about drug use in this population. And then when you start to think about interventions, well, there also is a need for more research on what interventions work best in tribal communities. I think there is some information out there that interventions that incorporate family, community, and traditional practices might be more effective. And I'm going to try to pull this up really quickly. So one of the programs that we have at the board is focused on youth almost exclusively. But when they began developing their materials, it was first around STDs, and now they've expanded out to suicide and substance use. It's couched in this really great forum where it's about how do we use culture? How do we promote that feeling of pride in my community? First, so this website, We Are Native, has all this great information about identity and Native pride and things that you can do to reconnect with your culture. And then couched within all that are, how do you deal with things like substance abuse? How do you deal with bullying? How do you, where do you go to for help? And it's very much focused on, by being strong myself, that means that my community is stronger. And they've found that those messages resonate with American Indian communities. So those are examples of interventions that still need more support and more research to prove the effectiveness over time. So those are some ways that we're hoping to use our data to advocate for that type of work. I'd like to thank the board again, and for the tribes of Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, patients and families, and our partners. I really glossed over the misclassification piece of it, but I'm happy to talk to you because I have about 10 or 15 more slides that I didn't get to. So thank you very much.
So at this time, we have about 15 minutes for questions. So we do have a microphone up here. If you want to come up to the microphone, just so that, because it's being recorded, that way we can all hear.
Just a comment. My name is Mac Sewell. I'm the retired state epidemiologist from New Mexico. A few years ago, some of you may know David Espy. I was peripherally involved in this project where they took national death certificate data and linked it to IHS files and found substantial misclassification in the death certificate data. But the idea was, is the IHS data was the sort of the gold standard. And then I was involved, there were then reports of multiple causes of death in I think it was a supplemental in the American Journal of Public Health. So it's just a suggestion for those that are dealing with this issue as a methodologic approach. David Espy knows way more about this subject than I do, but I would recommend folks take a look at that.
So thanks for the good presentations all around. Carrie, my question is for you about the CHSDA data. Have you thought about sort of making it a little bit of more, I don't know what the right word, I want to say robust, but that's not the right word, but anyway, a little bit of a bigger analysis mm-hmm. and turning it into a sort of a publication because the gentleman who just brought up mm-hmm. David Espy's work in the IHS linkage, mm-hmm. I actually was involved with the paper where we did that with cancer mm-hmm. and sort of fixed the misclassification and looked how many mm-hmm. Cases we saw that were actually Native cases that mm-hmm. and put that all together in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And with that group, I think even still the assumption was for other work that we had been doing that CHSDA was a better way to look at things. So I think there's actually you know, other groups that sort of see that as being a legitimate way to do it. So I think, you know, publishing to say, maybe it's not so good, might actually be worth doing. So I don't know if you've considered that. That's kind of a question.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. We actually, that did come up. I mean, originally this just started as, like I said, when, you know, Wendy had emailed me one day and said, hey, Carrie, can you, I'm just working on this project with Samantha. Can you just, you know, I know you have race and ethnicity in your data sets. Can you just run some quick analyses and, you know, kind of see what we find? And it kind of turned into this larger conversation. And so I think we had talked about trying to turn this into something. And so this is kind of the first step, and we haven't really talked about next steps, how to refine it. And certainly as far as a validation study, it would need to be refined a little bit.
Our graduate student worker that I was talking about is working on her dissertation, so we won't have her available much longer, and she's already started on a manuscript. I haven't told Carrie and Samantha yet, but yeah, we're planning. It's one of those things where I needed somebody else's eyes to tell me, no, this is really important, because for me it was just like, oh, okay, this didn't work, let's move on to the next thing. So it's helpful to have a lot of other eyes. I actually had a question for Maureen to talk a little bit more, because I missed a little bit about what you did when somebody had just a PO box that you couldn't geocode in the records.
So fortunately, PO boxes were able to be geocoded if they were complete and correct. If they weren't, then we just went through the same. We would look at the zip code and then the town. We treated PO boxes just like we treated other addresses.
Any other questions?
Sure. Well, actually, as long as I'm up here. Just to address the issue about misclassification, I can just quickly show you the extent of misclassification in the death records that we looked at. If you look at all deaths, it's about 9.6% of records, and you see about the same. And death records are actually quite clean compared to things like hospital discharge records, where we see about 60% of American Indian records misclassified. And my question was actually for you. So that issue of when you were going back and looking at claims data, one of the issues that we've seen in the Northwest is that a certain percentage of American Indians are Medicaid eligible. So if someone goes to a hospital, the payer, IHS is the payer of last resort, really, so Medicaid will get paid first. So I'm wondering if that could be a possible source of information for you.
That's a really good point, and that's a lot of part of my learning about how the payments and things that somebody could be duly eligible. I don't think it would account for everybody that we think is missing because the conversation moved into why people might not be diagnosed. But certainly, that's a reminder that I need to pay attention to that, because I think things are even changing with Medicaid expansion, and maybe people in the room know more. A lot more than I do about that. I'm just here on the learning curve, and I think there's much more to learn. It speaks to having partners, and that's helped me all along the way, including our EpiCenter folks.
I have a question for the last presenter. Do you have a slide with drug versus alcohol?
I ran the age-adjusted rates and didn't put it in the presentation.
Okay.
But I did, just in the distribution, so if you look at the proportion of deaths due to alcohol or drugs, and this is for the underlying cause of death, so this would have been kind of...
My reason for asking is I'm from New Mexico Department of Health, and for us, American Indian is our reference group, our lowest for drug overdose death.
Oh, interesting.
And it looks like maybe something like that going on for you as well, at least lower than non-Hispanic whites. And I was just curious. You said it was different when you looked at it by a rate.
Yeah, when I ran the rates, I think, I wish I had the data with me. Drug overdose death rates, even if you looked at alcohol overdoses or drug overdose, it was significantly higher for non-Hispanic whites. When you combine the two, it was about the same. So American Indians in our area do have higher rates of drug overdose, which is interesting that in New Mexico it's the lowest. So yeah, I'm not sure what could be the explanation for that. I can go back and send you the information if you're curious about it.
Any other questions? Great. If not, I want to thank the presenters today, and thank you for coming.